This is Unit 5 of Component 2. This lecture will present some definitions of and describe the application of evidence-based medicine. This diagram appeared in a paper by Mulroe et al. In 1997. It puts the use of evidence in the proper context. Basically, evidence is one of three aspects of what goes into making a clinical decision. First, we need to know what the research shows, the results of studies such as randomized trials and systematic reviews. But there are other factors that go into making a clinical decision. A second aspect is factors about the patient and/or the physician, such as cultural beliefs, personal values, experience, and education. Patients may have preferences. Physicians may have limitations in the skills that they have, particularly if in rural areas or places where the entire spectrum of medical services are not available. The third aspect of making clinical decisions is constraints. There are formal policies and laws and community standards. There may also be issues of time. If a patient is acutely ill, we may not have time to do what the absolute best evidence would support. Then, of course, there are issues of reimbursement. For example, what will be covered by insurance? There are many resources for evidence-based medicine. Not only do they give good descriptions of how to practice it, but they also demystify a lot of the ideas and techniques behind it. One of these is a book by Strauss et al., formerly known as the Sackett Book, as it was really the original book in evidence-based medicine authored by David Sackett of McMaster University before he retired. Strauss is now the editor of the book, which is in its third edition. There are also two books by Guyatt et al., which include several authors from McMaster University. These books come from a series of articles published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA, under the broad heading of User's Guides to the Medical Literature. In 2008, the second editions of these two books came out. One of them is a small handbook. The larger is a more encyclopedic reference about evidence-based medicine. There are also plenty of websites about evidence-based medicine, some of which are listed here. www.cebm.net, www.cche.net, http://ktclearinghouse.ca/cebm/. www.nettingtheinfluence.org.uk. Evidence-based medicine has been evolving over the years. A paper in 1999 by Hirsch observed this trend. Referring to the initial approach to evidence-based medicine as first-generation EBM. This was the idea that a clinician would actually find and critically appraise evidence as he or she was applying it in the clinical setting. The clinician would go out, find the article, critically appraise it, and then make the clinical decision. It became readily apparent, however, that the process took too much time, especially in the busy clinical setting, and that not all clinicians had the expertise to really understand the study design, the nuances of the statistics, and so forth. The more recent approach, referred to as the next generation of evidence-based medicine, is more the use of synthesis and synopsis of evidence for the clinician, making it more imperative to provide the clinician with online, up-to-date information that makes the application of evidence in clinical decisions easier. Slauson takes this a step further, arguing that we should not be discussing the different kinds of evidence and how to critically appraise them, but instead, we should put more emphasis on teaching clinicians better information management or information-seeking skills. Another viewpoint concerning evidence comes from Brian Haynes, whose name you will see throughout this unit. The kinds of questions that we think about when we apply evidence or when we are assessing either a treatment or a diagnostic test are, can it work? Does it work? And is it worth it? The first question we ask about a study is, can it work? These are typically called efficacy studies. These studies take place under ideal conditions such as a randomized controlled trial. The patients are followed closely with a great deal of data collected about them. Efficacy studies help us determine whether tests or treatments work. Evidence-based medicine mostly focuses on those kinds of studies. The next question is, does it work? These are sometimes called effectiveness studies, where we look at whether something works in the real world. This used to go by the name outcomes research, although that name is a little passé now. But the idea is to see if something works when put in the hands of a much larger segment of the clinical provider population. The final question in this framework is it worth it? So we do either cost-benefit or cost-effectiveness studies to see whether the benefits are worthwhile in relation to the cost of a test or a treatment. Another way to look at evidence is to look at the hierarchy of evidence. One approach shows the different types of evidence that clinicians use for decision-making. This model was developed by Haynes and originally started as the 4S model, the simplest version. He subsequently divided some of the levels into additional levels and updated the model to 5S and 6S. But really, the basic 4S model is preferred. The foundation of evidence is studies, original research that is written up in articles and published in medical journals. However, for many topics, especially common diseases and common treatments, there are many studies, so we need to synthesize them. Thus, the next level in the hierarchy is synthesis. The best syntheses are ones that are called systematic reviews. Also, sometimes called evidence reports, they systematically review all of the evidence for a given clinical question. Syntheses, however, can be quite substantial in length, and a busy clinician really might want to get to the gist of the evidence. Thus, the next level in the hierarchy is synopses, which are sometimes called evidence-based abstractions, where key points are abstracted from comprehensive syntheses. Finally, the highest level of evidence is systems, where there is actionable knowledge or knowledge taken from the synopses that can be put into a logical form and used ideally by electronic systems to automatically guide decision-making. Where does the evidence come from? Depending on the level, there are different types of evidence, and in the slides that follow, we will discuss a number of these in detail. Starting at the level of studies, this evidence usually comes from the medical literature, usually by accessing databases such as Medline, a database specific to medicine. Studies are retrieved from journals, after which we apply critical appraisal and the various formulae that we will go through, such as relative risk, a number to treat, sensitivity to odds ratio, etc. The next level is syntheses, which are typically systematic reviews or sometimes evidence reports. These are exhaustive reviews of the data on a given topic, and where appropriate are the application of meta-analysis, which is the combination of results of multiple similar studies into a single analysis. These studies have to be appropriately similar, and there are actually methodologic means to access whether studies are similar enough. If there have been 15 different clinical trials looking at surgery or medical treatment for back pain or a specific type of cancer, we can combine these studies. Again, they have to be similar enough. They need to have similar interventions, perhaps similar patient groups, and we can then combine them in a meta-analysis. Meta-analysis can be done not only for treatments, but also for diagnostic tests, prognosis, and so forth. Synopses, then, are summaries of information that are appropriate for the clinical setting. The synopses provides the answer. After all, we may be in a busy clinical environment with a patient with back pain, and we want to know what the evidence shows for this or that treatment. We do not necessarily want to know all of the many different studies that have been done and how they have been combined. And we do not necessarily want the details of individual studies, because for many topics, there have been many studies, and it would be inappropriate to only focus on one. Synopses are available in things like critically appraised topics, or CATs, as they are sometimes called. There are publications such as the book Clinical Evidence. InfoPoems is another research, as is PEER, which we will talk about when we discuss synopses in more detail. Clinical practice guidelines also fall into this synopses category. The highest level in the hierarchy is systems, which are decision support systems within electronic health records. They are probably the best way to actually provide evidence to clinicians where they are actually making decisions. This is the highest level of knowing the context of patient care and providing the evidence to the clinician to use in providing clinical care. How is evidence-based medicine applied? The steps are listed on this slide. The first step is phrasing a clinical question that is pertinent and answerable. The second step is identifying the evidence to address the question. The third step is critically appraising the evidence to determine if it applies to the patient. We will spend less time discussing critical appraisal, although we will go into more detail on it when we talk about interventions. However, all of the references listed several slides back describe the process of critically appraising the evidence. The next few slides discuss phrasing the clinical question. One way to view clinical questions is to distinguish between background and foreground questions. Background questions are general kinds of questions that come up in the care of patients, and these are usually answered without using evidence-based medicine techniques. We look them up in a textbook, or perhaps seek out a more classic review article that is not something like the systematic review. Foreground questions are when we ask for knowledge about managing patients with specific disorders and we're contemplating a test or a treatment. These are the questions that are usually answered with evidence-based medicine techniques. Let's explore this further. Sometimes background questions ask for general information that is not specific to a given patient, such as, what causes pneumonia? What are the types of things that usually cause pneumonia, such as bacteria, viruses, sometimes chemical pneumonia, and other things? Another example question is, when do the complications of diabetes usually occur? How long does one have the disease before you start to see kidney problems, heart problems, etc.? It turns out that the distinction from foreground questions is a little bit blurry. It is not quite as distinct as one might hope. For example, there are new etiologies or causes of disease that we may want to know. It also depends some on your level of training. If you are a subspecialist, something may be more of a background question, as opposed to when you are a student, when nearly everything is new, and all questions tend to be foreground questions. Though the distinction is blurry, it is important to understand a clinical question and phrasing a clinical question to find their best evidence. This brings us to foreground questions. Foreground questions have three or four essential components. One way to remember these components is the PICO acronym. A complete foreground question has a patient and/or a problem. There is also an intervention. It may be a treatment or a diagnostic test. There is a comparison intervention if appropriate. And then there is some sort of outcome. If it is a treatment question, there is a patient with a disease and administration of a specific treatment. If we are looking for evidence, we try to do a randomized control trial that compares that treatment with a control or a placebo group. Finally, there is some kind of outcome. Either the treatment is more effective or less effective than the control or placebo. With a diagnostic test, we may look at how accurate the test is, so that we are comparing against some sort of gold standard. With something like prognosis, how patients do, we may not necessarily have a comparison. Instead, we just follow the natural history of a disease. Here is an example of a foreground question. In an elderly patient with congestive heart failure, where the heart is not pumping as strongly as it could, are beta blockers, which are a type of drug, helpful in reducing morbidity and mortality without excess side effects. There are four major categories of foreground questions, and most clinical questions fall into these buckets. The first category is called an intervention, although many textbooks call it therapy. This category looks at the benefit of an intervention, such as a treatment or prevention of disease. Diagnosis is when we look at some way of diagnosing disease, typically with a test. The tests we commonly think of are blood tests, but any type of maneuver on a physical examination is also a diagnostic test, as is an X-ray. Often, we want to know what caused a disease, which is sometimes called the etiology of the disease. In the evidence-based medicine category, this is usually called harm. What causes harm to a patient? Sometimes harm is caused to a patient in the form of an intervention, and we may do studies to look at that. And then finally, the last question category is prognosis. What is the outcome of the disease course? When we find a piece of evidence, a study, we ask three questions. Are the results of the study valid? Are the results important? That is, did the results show that some treatment or test is efficacious? And then, can the results be applied to patient care? We also have to determine if the results from a study can be applied to a specific patient. If the study was done with a different age group or a different gender, the results may or may not be applicable. There are many sub-questions within these three broad categories that we ask that depend on the type of question, such as whether it is an intervention or diagnosis or harm question. And then, we also may ask different questions based on the type of study that we have. We may have a systematic review, or we may have a randomized controlled trial. In the next few lectures, we will look at the different types of clinical questions, how we look at studies, and how we look at evidence or answering those questions. Another hierarchy that we talk about in evidence-based medicine is the hierarchy of study designs, as seen on this slide, where the higher the level, the increasing validity of the design. When doing experiments, the best experiment, the most valid experiment, is a randomized controlled trial. In a randomized controlled trial, there is an equal probability that a subject is assigned to either an experimental condition or a control condition. Researchers make every attempt to control any other factors that may influence the outcome so that the resulting outcome is ideally due to the assignment to the experimental control group. We cannot always do randomized control trials. Sometimes it's even unethical to do them. The next level of evidence is the cohort study. This is a prospective study where we look at groups who have been exposed or not exposed to a factor. Of course, since they are not randomized, an individual may have some other reason why they had a particular outcome, and it may not necessarily be due to exposure to the factor. The third level is case control studies. These are retrospective studies where we look back and identify cases and then match them with controls and see if there is more exposure to some factor, whether it is a treatment or harmful agent or other factor. Of course, this can be further confounded by unknown factors. The next level of study design is a case series where a group is just observed without any controls. And of course, here we have little ability to compare an experimental group with a control group. Finally, there are studies like experimental opinion or physiologic studies. And these are only as good as the expert or the underlying knowledge that we have of physiology.